Hour three kicking off here in the White Claw Hard Seltzer Studios. I know Sam's stressed here in the new studio. Things not going smoothly over there as he learns. Sometimes live radio just has some hiccups. It's fine. He's going to need some White Claw Hard Seltzer to celebrate getting through this day, maybe right at 10:15 a.m. Tennessee baseball looked like they may be headed to making their fans drink on Friday nights as they got beat by Auburn, and you're really wondering how the season was going to shape up and whether or not this team had quote-unquote it. But then they responded on Saturday and Sunday with two offensive outbursts that gives you confidence heading out, you know, coming out of the weekend, heading into this upcoming next home series against LSU.
Yeah. It was a game one where, you know, some things didn't go your way necessarily. AJ Causey struggles for the second start in a row, I would say, for him. And, you know, maybe that's starting to become a little bit of a concern, a guy that obviously doesn't blow you away with his velocity or any power or stuff like that. Definitely more of a guy who's got better stuff. So you've seen some SEC teams, I think, kind of get some film on him and have kind of cracked the code a little bit on that. So I think that's something to keep an eye out on. But in game one, I think the story was just an Auburn bullpen that really shut down your lineup that you were not expecting to do that. I think in game two and three, you saw a little bit more indicative of what this Auburn pitching staff has kind of given them throughout the start of the year. But yeah, home runs and grand slams, I think, the story of the week for Tennessee baseball coming out of a road series at Auburn.
Is the offense the story or the necessity to get Andrew Lindsey back and healthy?
AJ Russell.
Yeah, sorry. AJ Russell.
First time you've done that in a while.
I know. It's because I was preparing a tweet. I was trying to tweet out the link, and it just got me confused, and I had to run over there to make sure the video was playing. AJ Russell, is that the story? The offense and, like, hey, more grand slams, Blake Burke, more home runs, the all-time leader at Tennessee. Is that the story, or is it like, hey, you really need some starting pitching to step up?
Yeah, you know, it might be the starting pitching because I think, you know, at this point in the year, you know what you've got with this lineup and you know how lethal this lineup is. I would have loved Andrew Lindsey right now, John. I think we would absolutely sign up to have him right now. But yeah, I think you're definitely hoping that AJ Russell can come back here soon and you know, slot into that role that he was doing so well in. But yeah, I mean, I definitely think that one of those starting roles is definitely a concern right now.
So only one spot. You're only worried about one spot right now.
Yeah. No, I mean, I think Beam gave you good stuff, and I think you've kind of started to find a groove kind of there on Sundays, whether it be Seacrest or kind of just a game by committee a little bit in a bullpen game almost.
And you have confidence in that?
I do. Have confidence in that. I think you've seen enough from, you know, guys like Nate Snead and things like that to be a longer inning relief guy that if you can just get a starter to give you three or four at the start of the game, I think you can feel pretty good, especially with how good your offense is. I mean, you came into this weekend, Georgia was leading the country with 84 home runs. Tennessee was second in the country at 73, and now they're both tied at 87. So you hit 14 home runs this weekend.
What I get worried about there, though, Bob, is would you rather have the elite pitching or the elite hitting? Because Tennessee does have the elite hitting. But the pitching to me is the biggest question. And like postseason baseball just feels like you have to have the pitching that you can rely on.
Yeah, I agree. We saw it. A couple of thoughts. First of all, I agree. In the College World Series last year, it felt like when we'd go up against LSU, it just felt like we didn't have a shot. I mean, we did, but it really felt like everything was going to have to go right because of the strength of their pitching. And I sit here and think, man, these are the moments where it'd be awesome if we had like a Major League Baseball format where you could trade and maybe get some pitching in exchange for a bat because it feels like we have a surplus of bats at this point.
I think Vitello even mentioned that on the drive last week. He's really? Like, yeah, you know, like we have a couple too many bats. I'd love to maybe have one extra arm and we'd be willing to sacrifice a bat. So last year, no, you're right. Like it did feel like you couldn't break through against LSU. But I will say that it was probably also related to that lineup last year not being very good either or good enough because it feels like this lineup is quite a bit better than last year's lineup. Like Do we think Skeens and LSU's bullpen would have shut down this lineup to that same regard? And I know Skeens might have, but like that elimination game wasn't against Skeens. That was against their bullpen that wasn't very good, you know, throughout most of the year. I know they got hot in the World Series and helped them win it all, but like I feel like this lineup this year would have broken through and scored some runs against that bullpen last year.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know. Like maybe it goes differently, you know, if that was the case. Now, last year you were a team that had the pitching and didn't have enough hitting, really. This year it seems like you got plenty of hitting. I just don't know if you have enough pitching.
I think what's interesting, though, is that your lineup will put so much pressure on the opposing pitching that
sure.
that might just even yourself out, you know, where it's like you're putting so much pressure on the opposing pitching staff that, you know, you might not have a top two or three staff in the SEC, but if you can just get into that like 5-6 range with how good your lineup is, I think you can kind of cancel those two out a little bit.
So one of my big questions coming out of the weekend is there a dominant pitcher in the country? I know there's not a Skeens out there that's like going to, you know, just be an arm that you can't really touch, and it's just like, hey, when he's pitching, you're not going to win. Is there a guy that Tennessee is potentially going to run into that has that type of stuff? Is it Chase Burns? Because, I mean, Wake Forest has been kind of slotted to play you in the regional potentially just because, hey, geographically that team's going to be close to you. Is he still kind of the number one pitcher out there in terms of draft prospects? I know the kid at Florida is a stud, but like I don't even know if Florida's going to make the damn tournament at this point with how bad they're playing. They had a brutal weekend. They're just three games above 500. Like I don't even know if they're a lock to even make a regional at this point.
The Arkansas pitching staff is absurd.
Right, but is there one guy that like stands out? I mean, again, that's even close to the dominance that Skeens had?
Yeah, I mean, it definitely isn't as much of like a starter, I guess, that is like the shutdown guy for Arkansas. I would definitely say that Hagen Smith is like probably the best, you know, reliever that you can have.
Did they bring that damn Plop guy back out there? Is he back out there?
No, he's not out there.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think it's definitely kind of that bullpen for Arkansas. They've got some great starting arms, but yeah, there's not a you know, blow away guy like Paul Skeens, a number one pick that just seems like it's impossible to go and beat that guy. No, the SEC is a little bit more wide open, I would say, in terms of starting pitching in that regard.
I mean, Wake Forest, we talked about Chase Burns, obviously, and if you look at like what the NCAA was previewing going into the season, they had three of their top nine pitchers coming back were from Wake Forest: Josh Hartle, Michael Massey, and then Burns, of course.
Not knowing the particulars of those guys individually, it does seem like that's not necessarily played out because it felt like their pitching staff was getting rocked outside of Burns for much of this year. Okay. What's the latest on Russell?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think Vitello has exactly been pretty vocal on that one.
The last update I saw didn't seem promising, like in terms of like immediate return, but like that he was still going to be a factor at some point this year. But at that point, if he's coming back in May, I don't know if he can get stretched out enough to be a reliable starter, maybe just a 3 or 4 inning guy out of the bullpen. I don't know.
And, you know, he was great in that role last year, so maybe they kind of think that they can, you know, piece it together with what they've got right now and just hope that maybe Russell kind of becomes that guy that could give you 5 in the bullpen instead of relying on him to be that starter.
Now, I don't want to come across as negative because I know I'm talking about what Tennessee doesn't have, you know, if the pitching or worried about that. The offense is as good as anything. Like, the offense, you know, we said it early on, it might be as good of an offense as Tony Vitello's ever had. That does seem to be the case through, you know, the first month of conference play.
Statistically, you're doing better than the 2022 offense right now.
And Drew Beam did have his best performance of the year this weekend, right? Is that fair to say?
Yeah.
Especially in conference play.
Yeah,
maybe even the entire season, because I mean, it wasn't like I don't think he was necessarily even dominant in the non-conference. Like, that was his best outing. And you need him desperately to kind of be that ace. And he pitched the entire game on Saturday. It was only 7 innings because Tennessee kind of continued that trend. I know we've talked about it. Like, I'm not that confident, don't feel that great in close games, but man, when this offense pours it on and just run rolls it, it makes it a lot simpler. Makes it a lot easier when you just win by 10 runs and you don't have to pitch 9 innings.
And I think you've also, you know, you've struggled out of the gate, I think, on Friday nights, and that's not something that you've, you know, that you want to continue. But I also do think it's a testament to the makeup of this team that you've, you know, you've taken advantage of these rubber match games on Sunday. I think it's, you know, it's easy to kind of lose focus, I think, throughout a weekend, and you know, you're not throwing your best arm and stuff like that. So I think it shows that this Tennessee team has the right makeup, and I just think that they're just a couple pieces away from really clicking.
I mean, if they go through 2-1, like in series like the one coming up against LSU, you go 2-1 in that weekend, that's a success, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, that, and then hopefully you try to get a sweep against one of these lesser teams. But that's the part I always have to remind myself of with baseball. It's like, you know, again, we talk about it a little bit in basketball about, you know, you can't apply the football mentality to this. You got to accept losing some games. But, boy, it felt Jekyll and Hyde, just what I've seen statistically and everything else in this last weekend. I mean, it sounds like it was pretty rough going Friday night, particularly from a pitching standpoint with Causey.
It'll be interesting to see when they bring back Russell here, John, because I think, you know, you've obviously got maybe the biggest series of the year with LSU coming up, but then the next one after that, you'll be at Kentucky, who's had a very strong start to SEC play.
They're 11-1, right? I mean, yeah, they're tied with Arkansas at the top of the conference.
Yeah, it's been a very surprising start to the year for Kentucky. So you've kind of got them after that, and then you've got a series with Missouri at home, and that's not as good of a team. I kind of wonder if they hold Russell back for those two big series just to try to get Russell fully healthy for the end of the year when you've got Florida, Vandy, and South Carolina in the year, then you go into postseason play.
It's to me, you're at the point where the next time has to be the last time.
Absolutely, yeah.
If he comes back and he's re-aggravated, like, you just shut him down at that point. Mm-hmm. So, like, you have to make sure he's ready to go when he comes back. You can't have him go back, you know, to the IL, if you will. I mean, I know there's no IL in college baseball, but you can't have him, you know, have a setback that puts him, you know, 3 weeks away again. You got to make sure you get it right. So you're not really going to be in contention for the overall SEC championship, I don't think.
Yeah, probably not.
It feels like that Alabama series is really going to hold you back from that, which I told you at the time, Sam, that Alabama was going to come and just – I told you they weren't good. And some people are like, you know, trying to defend that series loss. Ah, you know, that's a good team. They're ranked, blah, blah. They've been what? They're 4-4 and whatever. I think they've only won two games since they beat us, I believe, is what their standings are.
Yeah, they're 4-8 in the SEC right now.
So that means they're what? 2-7 over the last three weekends? It's not a very good team. And I think Tennessee losing that series, you almost needed a sweep if you were going to try to win the SEC championship. And not only did you not get a sweep, dropped 2-3. So feels like Arkansas going to be tough to catch with the pitching you're talking about. So if you're Tennessee at this point, you're jockeying for position and you want to be a top 8 team. That, to me, that's the goal for the rest of this season. And that's completely fine. No one does backflips for SEC championships in the regular season. Baseball is all about getting to the regional and super regional in Omaha. Going to have a healthy A.J. Russell. And you might need to call Andrew Lindsay and ask him if he can come back too. Hey, you might want to call Chase Burns and see if he has any regrets too.
Yeah, he's killing it, but Wake Forest isn't exactly.
I know this goes without saying, but if you had Chase Burns, you'd feel like you might be a World Series favorite.
Yeah, you'd be the best team in the country if you had Chase Burns.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I was just looking. I was kind of surprised. These are last week's Baseball America rankings. The new ones haven't come out yet, but I was surprised. You mentioned Wake Forest. I had no idea. They've got a losing record in conference right now, 7-8. And, I mean, ACC is pretty strong, too. There's some good teams in there, but that one caught me off guard. I wasn't expecting to see that.
All right, let's play some winners and losers of the weekend. Coming up next, it's the morning show on Fan Run Radio.
Are you ready to elevate your driving experience? Then you are.
All right, let's play some winners and losers of the weekend. Bob, what do you got for me? Who won?
Well, I would say one that we've spent a lot of time talking about. I think Kentucky basketball won. They were able to part ways with the coach that was polarizing, to say the least. I think that they don't have to pay that lifetime contract buyout of $33 million. And they get a chance now to get a reset. And in theory, they should be able to get a really, really big name. Time will tell, but they're going to be aggressive for sure. Number two for me was actually Saturday Night Live. I don't know if any of you saw it, but Kristen Wiig hosted, and she pulled a lot of industry favors, boy. She had cameos by Jon Hamm, Paul Rudd, Martin Short, Fred Armisen, Will Forte, Ryan Gosling, Matt Damon, and Kaia Gerber. So it felt like one of the really old, strong Saturday Night Lives, including a musical guest appearance by Ray. You familiar with her? R-A-Y-E?
I am not.
Get familiar, because I wasn't either. And she was a revelation, man. She was incredibly talented. Kind of a jazzy, smoky vibe to her, but it was, really, really good. It was just a good show, and it seems those are hard to come by with Saturday Night Live these days, where it's like top to bottom really strong.
So Matt Damon, Paul Rudd, Ryan Gosling, okay.
Yeah.
This isn't the girl that was playing like guitar at the Super Bowl, was
that's
it?
That's her.
Her.
Yeah. Okay. She is her. Yeah, this is different. Yeah, I'm serious. I'm like, that's what I'm going to do today is get on Spotify and check out some of her music. Right. I was very impressed.
What was Kristen Wiig promoting?
She's got a new series on Apple TV Plus called Palm Royale, where she's somebody trying to crack the Palm Beach elite. It's kind of a dramedy thing.
Okay.
I don't know fully the scope of it, but that's definitely what she was promoting.
Okay.
And boy, she is, and she looked great. She's totally glammed up from the old days, you know.
Well, I saw the discourse surrounding that. I guess some people had talked about how I made a comment about how no of the SNL girls are hot. And, you know, some people on the internet were really giving backlash to that statement and posting some of the attractive cast members. And, yeah, I saw Wiig, and she was looking good. And, you know, I'm a huge Tina Fey fan myself, but I did see that Kristen's had a glow up. She's very talented and very beautiful.
Yeah, and they were breaking out also in the commercial breaks her new Target spot where she plays her Target lady character, which if you've ever seen that, it's a pretty funny bit too. And then top of the list for me in terms of winners was, again, another thing we've touched on today, but it bears repeating, women's college basketball. TV ratings that have been just going through the roof. It seems like each night now when there's a meaningful game, they're setting a record. Latest was Friday night, the UConn-Iowa game, 14.2 million average viewers. And that was a late night game in relative terms. Didn't start till about 9:30. And so they're inclined to believe. It'll be interesting to see what the ratings come back for on the championship game. We'll learn more about that today, I would think, because of the time it aired. It ran yesterday at 3 p.m., and there had to be a strategy as to why they did that rather than running it in prime time. So we'll see. But it could be another record broken. But, again, it just underscores there's a lot of contributing factors. The sophistication of the game is growing. Caitlin Clark's been such a lightning rod, as has Angel Reese, and a lot of other great players that are going to be coming back next year. It just feels like they are cresting at a real high, and it's coming at a time where the NCAA tournament for women, their media contract is up for renewal this fall. So timing couldn't be better in that regard for them, for the NCAA, and be interesting to see if ESPN continues to own that event. Those are my winners.
My winners of the weekend, number three, I went with Applebee's Boneless Wings. Did you know that they were voted best boneless wings in the country?
No.
And they didn't even have to put the word wings in their name. That's what I saw that commercial about 30 times this weekend for some reason. And Applebee's Boneless Wings, the best in the country. They won a taste test. And it made me feel good because, you know, back in 2009, 10, 11, that Applebee's late night menu, it got your boy through some tough times. Some $2 LITs you could go in there and get to. Good date night spot, late night date night spot. It did a lot of favors for me, so I'm paying it back. Shout out to Applebee's and the Boneless Wings. Best Boneless Wings in the country.
Not a DJ Burns thing? That didn't influence you?
You know, DJ Burns, no, that's, his star is gone. Score some points.
I had like four of my buddies go to the Applebee's for that deal this weekend.
Really?
Yeah.
What was the deal? I didn't see that.
Well, there was some deal with like some drink bucket and like the wings. You could get them both together, I think.
Okay.
They said it was terrible.
Must not have been the boneless wings.
Yeah.
Because, again, award-winning, apparently,
yeah,
according to the commercials. Number two, I went with Kentucky basketball fans. Not necessarily Kentucky basketball yet, like Bob had, just because we don't know who the hire is going to be, and there's a chance they don't actually land one of the big fish. And there is still a little bit of a hit of a perception nationally whenever you lose your coach to a different school. Even if it makes perfect sense and it's actually a good thing, it's still kind of funny to see somebody be, actually, no, I'm good. I'm out of here. I don't want to deal with you people anymore. But their fans have to be happy because they get a coaching search. They get to get rid of a guy they didn't really want to be around really the last, like, 3 years. And I'm a little envious of just the energy they feel right now. But number one for me, I went with NCAA basketball in general. For as bad and poorly ran as the NCAA has been over the last history of the world, they have somehow lucked into, you know, a great Final Four setup. The women, I thought all the games were bangers. I know UConn ran away from NC State, but that was a one-point game at halftime. And then got a banger of a game with Caitlin Clark and Paige Beckers. And then, you know, got a undefeated South Carolina against Caitlin Clark on Sunday for the championship. And then in the men's game, they got the two best teams playing off for a national championship tonight, with Zach Edey and Purdue going up against Hurley and UConn. Hurley's kind of gotten that rub where he's the main attraction on in that program. You don't talk about the coach, talk about him. Or you don't talk about players, talk about him.
I like his rallying cry for the team. I hadn't heard this until the weekend, where he was saying it's not just repeating. They want to do something that's never been done at UConn before. Is, you know, for a program that's won, you know, multiple national titles, they've never had a repeat champion. You know, there's not many to begin with. So it's interesting how he keeps finding kind of milestones that he pushes this team to reach, and they respond.
I thought you were going to tell me he's already thinking about a three-peat. I was going to say, damn it, give it a rest, Hurley.
Nah, he's that will be something, because it could happen. We talked about South Carolina women just a moment ago. He's going to probably have to replace his starting five next year.
Well, he had to get rid of, what, five of his top eight from last year, though, right? In terms of scores, is that right?
I think he's losing 75% of the points from last year's team.
Yeah, well, he'll figure it out.
Yeah.
But yeah, probably not win a national championship. But, yeah, trying to go back-to-back, and I think this will be, what, UConn's sixth title in the last 25 years?
Yeah, if they win, that is it.
Anybody we missed, Sam, on the winner's list?
I had the Braves bullpen over the weekend. No runs in six innings on it. Pretty much went, what, 14 and a third with no runs allowed this weekend against the Diamondbacks. Obviously, some unfortunate things happened to the Braves with Spencer Strider going down, but the Braves bullpen that they invested in this offseason definitely pays off in a sweep against the Diamondbacks this week. And I also had Don Staley dominance, undefeated season. Caps it off with a great performance yesterday. Basically said that she almost retired, too. She was like, I was thinking about retiring before this season. I don't know if that's true or not, just to kind of make the championship seem a little bit more special. But,
well, I heard her in the postgame talking about, like, you know, no, this was the most unlikely championship run. I think she was really talking about going undefeated.
Yeah.
I'm like, okay, let's not play like you're some big underdog. And it's like, we replaced all five starters from last year. I was like, whoa, okay, never mind. Maybe that was super impressive. Do you think she's still a winner of the weekend? Is she going to face any backlash from her comments on Saturday night when OutKick ambushed her a little bit about, like, trans rights and whether or not trans women should play?
Oh, I did. Okay, yeah.
In the women's game. And, you know, Iowa's coach was like, I'm not answering that. And Don Staley, you know, credit to her. You know, regardless of how you feel about it and what you think, and I do think it's kind of a confusing thing, because, you know, when it comes to politics, some people are more empathetic. But even if you are super empathetic, you have to look at the competitive aspect of sports and the differences in people's bodies and the dangers that that can create. So it's a very complicated topic for some people. Even the people that do try to think of themselves as more liberal and compassionate But I give her credit for not sidestepping the question, regardless of what you think about her answer. She answered, and then the guy kind of tried to push her on it, and she kind of made a joke about how much he was pushing her on it, and then just flat out said, yeah, I think you should be allowed to play. And I know people were kind of – I was sitting at Cracker Barrel yesterday, and the people next to me, an older couple with, I guess, their really old mom was sitting there, and he was telling the 85-year-old woman about what Dawn Staley had said, and her jaw was dropped. She was so disgusted. So, like, it's made some people mad, I know for sure. The people at Cracker Barrel were not happy with what Dawn Staley had said. Anybody else, Sam? All right, Bob, losers of the weekend. Blake Burke. Who did you have?
Blake Burke.
The one thing I'll say about Dawn Staley, very impressed with her poise and everything yesterday when Iowa was making the run at him and everything else early. She just very calm. I've grown to be impressed with her in this age of watching Kim Mulkey flaunt around and everything. She just gets it done. Okay, losers of the week. Number three is the Houston Rockets. They were just not too long ago. Literally like a week and a half ago, maybe 2 weeks ago, there were articles being written about how they've got the blueprint for a really successful team. I think that's still true and how they are sneaking their way into the playoffs, et cetera. Well, they have since lost five games in a row, culminated by this weekend where they lost two and one in pretty inexplicable fashion towards the end against Dallas that went into overtime. They're missing the playoffs. The playoff field has been set. Again, this is a team that probably didn't have that high an expectation level to begin with, but they had it right there for the taking to get to a play-in game, and feels like they've kind of squandered it, and guess they'll start pointing towards next season.
They'll be a team that gets kind of the Oklahoma City Thunder treatment, though, where people have them circled to take a big step next year. Now, whether or not they can successfully do it like the Thunder have, you know, and gone from missing the playoffs to 53 wins. I don't think Houston can quite take that leap, but I expect them to be a playoff team next year.
Yeah, I think that's probably true. Number two, guy by the name of Norby Williamson, who is a long-term, high-ranking programming exec at ESPN. He's been there 40 years. He was shown the door Friday. And the point here is he lost the battle with Pat McAfee, basically. McAfee called him out by name during the all the stuff going on with Aaron Rodgers and everything else, and you know, called him a rat. And there's been a lot of chatter on social media from other former ESPNers who don't seem to have any love lost with Norby. Big names, you know, like Rachel Nichols and others. So this guy had started, he rose from the mail room at ESPN up to a dream job, and well, he's no longer there. So, and again, I guess the takeaway is at this point in time, I don't think you want to tussle too much with McAfee if you're at ESPN.
I haven't seen McAfee dance on his grave at all.
Well, this just happened on Friday. Okay. So we'll see. We'll see on his show today if anything happens. I hope he doesn't. I mean, it's just really not necessary, but he may. He may.
I just wonder, is McAfee doing his show today? I guess he's been at WrestleMania the last two nights. He's got Monday Night Raw tonight in Philadelphia, too. So I was wondering if he would go back to Indianapolis to do the show, or if he'd find, I guess, a place to set up there.
He travels with that show, I'm pretty sure, right?
Yeah.
Like, doesn't he do it on the road when he does WrestleMania stuff?
He has before. That's a good point. He might just be doing his part from Philadelphia, and they have AJ Hawk running it in the studio or okay. something.
Long weekend for him.
Yeah, no doubt.
Grinder.
Yeah, he works hard. My top loser of the week, Sam alluded to a piece of this, and that's top line Major League Baseball pitchers. Who went down, you know, it started last week with a really highly touted young pitcher, Yuri Perez from the Miami Marlins, who's now out for the season with Tommy John. And then this weekend we saw Shane Bieber. And then likely, it hasn't been confirmed, but likely Spencer Strider, both going to be out. Strider, they're saying, just out till September now, but I think effectively it'd be crazy for them to bring him back. I guess maybe they're trying to hold out hope they'd have him for the postseason, but I think they're, you know, Bieber's definitely missing the season. I think Strider will too, and they're all headed towards Tommy John surgery because of UCL damage. And the big point in all this is some of that could be bad luck, but some of it is also there's a big bone of contention going on with the players' union and Major League Baseball that they've already, you know, that last year they introduced the pitch clock, and they adjusted it again here in the second season, and they continue to tighten that window, which is great for the fans in terms of pace of game, but they're attributing some of this to that the wear and tear is inordinate on pitchers' arms. And, you know, I don't think it's been proven, but that's one of their complaints right now from a players' union perspective. And it is weird that this many pitchers, and some of them, you know, Strider's got such a violent motion to begin with. It's something I would have never thought about, but I guess it's something to consider.
Do you think that is playing into it?
I don't know. I think it could. I mean, if you think about it, because, again, these guys, you know, have to pick up the pace on their motion. You could argue they have to throw – I don't know what it means to their pitch count, but it's possible that they're throwing – they're certainly throwing more pitches in less time. And so in a sport and in a position that is so kind of grounded in technique, I think it could be a factor. Again, one I hadn't thought of, but – I don't know. Sam, what do you think?
What I've been seeing getting resurfaced kind of on social media is Tyler Glasnow's video from 2 years back, I believe, when he underwent the same thing, had UCL surgery. And basically it was after the MLB like took away sticky substances for pitchers. And he was saying like, this is going to kill pitchers' arms. Was basically just saying that like it's not even that much of an advantage. Like he only uses sunscreen and rosin, nothing like pine tar or anything like that. But was just talking about how much he has to grip the baseball itself without using the sticky stuff, and it just puts so much pressure like on his arm and stuff like that, that he's saying that like people that are just with how much the game is advanced in terms of guys like throwing it hard, it's just hard to like be able to use a baseball that's been thrown out there with no stuff on it or no sticky stuff to be able to like put that much wear and tear on your arm.
So that would say that it's not necessarily the pitch count, but it's just like, hey, cracking down on those things.
Well, this video was made before all those pitch, you know, right. All those rule changes went into place.
But right, but I mean, the rule changes are still there, though.
Absolutely,
right? I mean,
like, yeah.
You still can't.
No, yeah, you can't do it now. But I think definitely what Bob's saying in terms of, you know, limiting pitching visits and, you know, and how many guys you got to face and, you know, there's just a whole bunch of things that go into it now. I think there's definitely a little bit of an epidemic going on with pitcher injuries, and I think the league just wants so much offense, but you're going to kill the product if you take all the way the best pitchers too.
There's so many old school pitchers that are probably like scoffing at this idea, like yeah. Guys that used to pitch
150 pitches a game,
yeah, honestly, like, man. Over 200 innings and 40 starts, and yeah, like
Bob Gibson was the right. King, like 140 pitches a game without batting an eye.
Oh, yeah, I'm not even going that far back. Yeah. I just meant guys from, like, yeah, the early 2000s. Like, CC Sabathia is probably like, really? What? But, yeah, I mean, yeah, if you go even older than that, sure. All right, that was all your losers. My losers of the week. You know, I didn't think too many people lost in sports this week. I thought it was just kind of a good weekend for people to win. You know, the teams that lost just kind of were supposed to lose. There wasn't anybody super embarrassing. But number three, I went with a combo of SEC baseball rivals. I went with Florida and LSU. LSU drops another home series to Vanderbilt, but still they won game one. And you're thinking, okay, maybe they'll get on track. Nope, lost game two, lost game three. They're now 3-9 in the conference. And then, yeah, Florida swept as they're now just 17-14. Overall, like they don't win midweek games, and this weekend they got swept, and I'm curious to see how far they fall in the rankings. They were what, like number six, I think, coming into the week?
Sounds about right.
We'll see how far they fall there, but I thought it was a bad weekend for them. Two teams that were ranked high in the preseason that had championship aspirations. LSU dealing with the hangover curse that's hit SEC baseball teams after winning a championship. Florida just... I don't know what their problem is. Number two, something you guys probably aren't going to care about, but I was disappointed by WrestleMania entrances. Typically, you get some really good entrances on WrestleMania weekend. People go a little extreme, put on a real show, and embrace the pageantry of it. I thought for the most part this weekend that the entrances were not very good at all. Jey Uso came out with Lil Wayne, which, I mean, kind of like, oh, wow, Lil Wayne, he's there. But it wasn't very good. There were no cool stunts, no cool mobiles really driven out outside of Logan Paul coming out like in a prime tank or prime, like, just vehicle with prime, you know, blasted all over it. I was disappointed with the WrestleMania entrances. And number one, my biggest loser of the weekend, I went with Rat Beef. People are so excited about the potential for Rat Beef, and you know, the last like week and a half, people have been talking about it since Kendrick Lamar had taken some shots. On Friday, you had J. Cole respond. You're like, okay, here we go. Maybe we'll get some heavyweights actually dropping diss albums and or diss records and talking and bringing back that old school feel. And then last night on stage, you had J. Cole crying, apologizing for saying mean things about his competitor. And it just, what happened to the game I love? What happened to the game I love? Tupac and Biggie rolling over in their graves. It's different when they're actually dead from that beef. Jay-Z and Nas. What happens? 50 Cent. J. Cole crying. I'm sorry. I'm a fan. It's disappointing. Anybody we miss, Sam?
I was right there with Bob on the Tommy John stuff. I also had basically just the MLB as a whole. There was this kid, Nolan Shanuel, I believe is how you pronounce his last name, for the Angels. He had started his career, I guess, a little bit last year and then bringing it up into this year. But they changed a clear single that he had apparently on March 30th to an error. It ended his on-base streak to start his career at 30 games, and it was the third longest streak in MLB history. If you look up this video, I mean, it's just like a hard hit ball that's clearly a single, and they call it an error, and they ruined this kid's streak, and the Angels broadcasters had some choice words for the MLB. It was a nice little rant from the Angels broadcast team, but they really just kind of dragged Major League Baseball and Manfred through the dirt a little bit.
Did you see the baseball play where the umps called a drop a catch, yeah, and they couldn't review it, so like they just
it's just that
had yeah to stick with the call?
And then Angel Hernandez like called a ball that was just terrible, right down the middle, didn't give a guy time. Yeah, it was.
Well, I didn't see that one. I saw one where he punched somebody out on a check swing that was like maybe the worst check swing strikeout I've ever seen.
Yeah,
he was on the wrong side of that one too.
I'm personally not the biggest fan of, you know, the robo ump type movement, but man, after seeing some stuff that you've seen so far, like, you need something.
Winners and Losers of the Weekend was brought to you by Inward Half. Check out their spring line right now at inwardhalf.com. Experience the comfort of their signature polos, outerwear, and other accessories cleverly designed to keep you in the swing of everyday life. It is golf time. I told you earlier, fanrunradio.com/shop if you want to get involved with the Fan Run Open and help support some local Knoxville charities. Sign up your team, sign up an individual, buy some Inward Half, wear the Inward Half to the Fan Run Open, inwardhalf.com, or you can look for them in your favorite pro shop. Golf season's here. Good batch of winners and losers. Send us to break. We'll come back. We'll wrap this bad boy up.
Are you ready to show off that confident, radiant smile you've...
Like John said, really good batch of winners and losers, and we even passed on a loser that I think bears saying real quick. Country star Morgan Wallen just got released this morning from a Nashville jail, charged with 3 counts of felony, reckless endangerment with a deadly weapon. He apparently threw a chair off of a 6-story rooftop of Chiefs on Broadway Sunday night and laughing about it. So the legend lives on with Morgan Wallen. It's all the extracurricular stuff that seems to bring headlines for him. He's a talented artist, but this stuff keeps showing up.
Got lucky that it didn't actually hit anybody.
Exactly.
I don't know if he was looking over to see that it wouldn't hit anybody or what the circumstances surrounding it were. The thing is, I don't think this is going to sway anyone's opinion of him. Your opinion of him is already kind of made up one way or the other. Either you like him and kind of know, hey, he's kind of a wild card, or you use this as more fuel for the reasons you don't like him. Did he, Sam, you seem like you're a Morgan Wallen fan.
Oh.
Did he have any type of like alcohol treatment after that video came out, and like he kind of had to do a little bit of an apology tour whenever the video of him saying the N-word drunkenly came out? Did he do like a, hey, I'm going to try to get sober type of thing?
Because
I know he had the song on the one album about like how basically how trying to live like a rock star is killing him. And like, it was kind of him. It seemed like a cry for help, honestly, whenever I heard that. But I didn't know if he did the whole like, hey, I'm trying to get sober thing or not.
I'm not sure. I'm not the biggest Morgan Wallen fan, to be honest with you.
I don't know
But I think he just kind of went radio silent. I think he tried to just let it all blow over, I feel like, and just like not go on social media or anything like that.
Well, not only, I mean, it did blow over, right. And I mean, people kept streaming his album whenever he was quote unquote canceled, and like it was still number one. So like he doesn't really have to pay for any of this. And you know, Bob mentioned smiling in the mugshots probably because he thought it was funny. Like it's probably like, oh,
probably it's gonna go on a T-shirt. I might as well.
Yeah, this is like nothing. I'll pay this fine. Like bail was what, like $1,500. You get out. People will sell the mugshot, like you said they did with Zach Bryan, who kind of had a similar thing. Although his wasn't even as cool as throwing a chair off a roof. His was just I was being mean to a cop and got arrested. Is kind of what happened with him. But if he'd hit that cop, you know, if the chair would have hit somebody, he would have found himself in a lot more trouble. But I think he'll be fine. I think he'll be fine. I did see that this morning, though. Those Broadway nights, right?
Broadway Sunday nights.
Yeah. Well, Bob, we got a championship game tonight.
We do.
My level of interest in this is maybe 7 out of 100.
Wow.
Yeah, I don't care. To me, like, whoever wins a championship, it doesn't affect me, and it doesn't affect Tennessee. I guess I'm rooting for UConn just because I have some beef with Zach Edey, but if he wins, it's a cool story to go from, you know, have another team get bounced by a 16 seed and come back and win it. But like, Hurley's already kind of proven he's elite. UConn's already, to me, proven they're a blue blood, a modern day blue blood. Like, whoever wins tonight doesn't really matter. The game can be great, and I'll watch. I just don't have a rooting interest, and the storylines aren't there for me in this one.
I don't want to dredge this up, but I think I will. If you watch that Purdue-North Carolina State game, I felt the way the refs called that game, it would have been really interesting if they had called the Tennessee game the same way.
Yeah.
You agree?
Completely. Well, yeah, I mean, like, there were no free throws in that game. Yeah. Like,
there were no fouls, really, till later, but it was like in the first half. I mean, it was unbelievable. It was a different kind of game, and you saw what happened. I mean, Purdue was they struggled a little bit. Braden Smith got shut down. North Carolina State had better athletes, but, my God, they could not shoot. I mean, that game could have been a blowout, and it never materialized till the very end. But
was it a physical game?
I wouldn't. Yeah, I'd say physical, but I mean, what they really did, it reminded me of what North Carolina State did to Dalton Connect. They just kept collapsing on whoever, you know, it'd be Edie, or they pressure Braden Smith right at the half court line, and they just have fast hands. They just kept like disrupting the ball, deflecting it, you know, stripping it out of their hands. Hats off to them, man. They made a great run, and they you know, they tried to hang around as long as they could in that game, but tonight's game, I think what I'm really most disappointed in is the start time. And it's not just because we've got to get up early. It's just, why do you have to start that game at 9:20? I know it's obviously driven by some level of research that ties to ratings and allowing for the premium ad spot costs and everything else. But it's a real disservice to college basketball fans in general.
I mean, it has to be just... I always just assumed it was just to give people on the West Coast time to get home.
I mean, and it's taking place in Phoenix, so it's mountain time there, so they're starting at 7:20 there. So, I don't know. I just disappointing. I wish they could start that thing at like 8:30.
Phoenix has mountain time?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I didn't know any cities actually were in mountain time.
Yeah, Colorado.
Phoenix. Well, yeah, I mean, I knew like Denver, but I really thought Denver.
Anything out
like,
of the mountains.
I thought like Denver and Utah were like the only ones, honestly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Interesting. Learned something new today.
But, yeah, 6.5-point favorite for UConn. I feel that's a little higher than I thought, but we'll see. I mean, it could just as easily be a blowout by UConn the way they've been rolling sometimes. So we'll see.
Sam?
Yeah, you know, my interest isn't too high in this either. I'm kind of with you, John. I feel like it's I'll be rooting for UConn, I guess. But a part of me does want to see a close game. You know, I feel like I was rooting for the UConn blowout for a while, but now I kind of want to see a close one.
Yeah, I mean, like, I think it's the two best teams. So whoever wins it, it's kind of like when Gonzaga and Baylor played that one year. Like,
yeah.
Except there were storylines there, like, you know, Mark Few trying to break through and win one. Like, I don't feel the same way about Painter as I do with Mark Few. Hoping for a good basketball game. It's the Monday night. It's the Monday night after WrestleMania, though. It's a big one. I'll be tuned in.
Biggest hangover in sports, right?
No. It's actually a big one. Like, they try to, you know, ride that wave. So, no, it's a big one, Sam. This is a big deal tonight. So, that's where I'll be tuned into. So, you guys can let me know.
I do want to watch, again, Hurley reacting to the refs, depending upon how they call that game with Edie, could be must-watch TV.
It's a good point. Maybe that's one storyline there. And going back-to-back would be cool for them. But, yeah, I got no... no real interest in it.
Hurley technical prop bet would be a fun one.
Yeah.
Another day where we're going to not have the G.I. Jake show. We're going to try to get in here. And I think we maybe have gotten the microphone figured out.
It sounds a little better.
Seems like Bear maybe put it in upside down, not to throw him under the bus. But beep, beep, beep. There it is. The drive will be live at 3 o'clock. Stay locked in on Fan Run Radio.